And if you're hot, as I've said many times, use Buddhist air conditioning. And Buddhist air conditioning is, if it's hot outside, you keep a cool head. And if it's cold, you develop a warm heart. And that's called Buddhist climate control. But this evening's talk, somebody called me up during the week. And they were serious. They said they got an email which scared them. The email said that the world is going to end in 2012. And I did some research and find it's only a movie. Nevertheless, they said, apparently it's according to the Mayan calendar, and many other things are coming together in, actually it's the, it's December the 20th, the 20th of the 12th, 2012, the world is going to end. And they got very scared, and I said, look, the world is not going to end in the 20th of December 2012. And I said, I guarantee it. If the world does end, and I got it wrong on 2012, you can ask the Buddhist Society of Western Australia for your membership feedback. That's what I call a guarantee. But just think about it. Obviously, if the world ends, there won't be a Buddhist society to give you any money back. So it's one of those guarantees you can't lose. But people are very stupid. They think the world's going to end in 2012. And they get worried about this. But when will the world end? When the world doesn't end, it keeps coming and going. But it reminded me of a story. This isn't an incident. When many years ago, I used to go teaching in the prisons down in Bunbury. And the only place I could stay was the Catholic parish house. And they're very, very kind. The Catholics down there, they let me stay there. And I remember one day, one of the Catholic priests, who was just, you know, trying to be friendly, very nice person, he took me, I think, from the station by the beach. And I remember him turning around to me and said, Ajahn Brahm, what does the ocean speak to you? And I said, impermanence. And he got very upset, because for him, it was completely opposite. It was eternity. And there was a difference between Christianity and Buddhism. And certainly in Buddhism, we always have this great idea of like the impermanence, the rising and falling of things, the flow of life, which is up and down. And it's such a wonderful thing to actually embrace. Because whenever there is any difficulty or troubles in your life, see, I've already coughed once already, so please don't get me any cough medicine. I've got heaps of it. It's just hay fever time. This is hay fever time, and Venerable Nito next to me, he suffers much worse than me. So this time of the year, you have a little cough. But if you just wait for a couple of weeks, the cough disappears. It's just impermanent. So you don't have to worry about it. Don't make a big deal about it. The problem is that whenever there's any problem in life, because people don't understand, it's the way that these things pass away by themselves. So you don't need to worry about it. You don't make a big deal and big fuss and bother about it. Just wait for a while. And everything heals by itself. And it's because of that, because of this law of impermanence, there is one teaching which we often give, and I repeat this because it's a fabulous teaching, and it solves so many of the problems in life. The teaching that this too will pass. And I mention this as the first time I read this story, a Buddhist story. It was a story of an emperor's ring. And the story went like this. There was a young man, in other words, someone who's inexperienced in life, and he was put in this position of great authority, running a kingdom. And of course, you know, being a young man, he didn't really have the skills and the wisdom, the experience to do his job properly. Whenever things were going well in the kingdom, he would hold parties and celebrations. And when things were going wrong in the kingdom, he would just stay in his room and sulk. In other words, when things were going well, he wouldn't give enough time to work, to plan, to rule the kingdom for those good times to last long. He would just spend all the good times just partying and celebrating. When things went wrong, he got so depressed and upset and angry again he became incompetent of doing anything. And it was up to his ministers to try and find a way to teach a king. You've got to be very careful with a king. If you say the wrong word or the wrong thing, you get very in big trouble. So they had to find a skillful way of teaching their king how to rule the kingdom in a very simple way. And what they did was, just they met together, they decided to order a ring for their king. And the ring was a very simple ring, a gold ring. The only thing which distinguished it was the words on the outside, which was, "This too will pass." And they gave this ring to their king to wear on all occasions. And it worked a treat, because the king would actually look at his ring, "This too will pass." And what that meant, when the things were going terribly in his kingdom, the economy was down, people were on strike, there was a lot of difficulties, he'd still look at his ring and said, "This too will pass." And that gave him the hope and the motivation to keep on working. And he never got so sad or depressed as he did before, because he knew that things would change. They had to change. That was the nature of life. It will pass. And of course, even more importantly, when things were going well in his life, when the kingdom had a great economy, everyone was happy and prosperous, he wouldn't waste time partying. He'd have a few celebrations. But he remembered that the prosperity was also fragile. And so he worked hard for that prosperity and happiness to last a long time. He became a very skillful emperor. The bad times didn't last very long. The good times last longer than anyone could remember, simply because he remembered the great teaching of "This too will pass." And I know that at least a couple of people, I know one person, when they heard that story from me a long time ago, they actually got their own ring made, and they have those words on the outside of that ring, "This too will pass." I remember just somebody showed me a cutting from a newspaper when there was a big massacre of students at Virginia Tech a few years ago, at the memorial service which they held for those massacred young men and women. They were wearing headbands which said, "This too will pass." And it was something which really helped them to overcome the tragedy and pain. Unfortunately, that once the tragedy was forgotten, they threw away those headbands. They should be wearing them on all occasions, not just the time there's difficulties and tragedies in life. Because if we can only remember that this is very effective in times of difficulty and disappointment, but it's also incredibly effective in times of happiness and prosperity as well. It's a law, a rule of life that we all know. We've all been through these things, we've all been through difficulties, tragedies, disappointments. We know it passes. I don't know the biggest tragedy you've ever had, the difficulty, the problem, maybe the death of a loved one, it may be losing your job, it may be losing all your money in the stock market, problems which sometimes you think, "How on earth am I going to get out of this?" And you have. It has changed. Our problem is that whenever we do sort of land in the ship, we think we're going to be there forever. Whenever things get really, really bad, we forget it does pass. You know that sometimes all one needs to do is nothing. Instead of struggling all the time and thinking that, oh, we have to make it, to make a change, sometimes all we need to do is just relax and rest, and things change by themselves. We don't need to be the agent to make it change. It just happens. It's the law of nature that things are always changing. So if you can't do anything about it, leave it alone, enjoy the moment, and just wait and see. And I told this old story. Some of these stories are in Opening the Door of Your Heart. But this was a great story which, you know, certainly meant a lot to me. But the person who told me the story changed their life and actually saved their life. This was the story of when I was a school teacher before I became a monk. And my fellow school teacher was almost about to retire. He was the head of the English department in this school. And he said that he was in the British Army during the Second World War, fighting the Japanese in Burma. Now remember, this is war. And in war, you know, people kill each other. And this was dangerous. This was the real frightening situation for a young man. And he said that one day he was sent out on patrol in the jungles with a small group of soldiers, and unfortunately they wandered into a huge number of Japanese troops. The scout told them that they were completely surrounded and heavily outnumbered. He thought he was about to die. Thousands of miles from home, at war, totally outnumbered and surrounded by the enemy. But he said that a big wave of heroism went through his body. He never looked at himself as a hero, but he decided, let's try and fight our way out. Because if we fight our way out, now who knows? There's not much chance, but somebody might make it. And if we don't make it anyway, we'll be able to take some of the enemy into death with us. There's a sort of heroic thing which, you know, you see on movies, which is absolutely stupid, because real life is not quite the same as what happens in movies. But he wanted to fight his way out. But the captain, the commanding officer, said, no, we will not fight. He said, instead, we'll all sit down and have a cup of tea. It was the British Army, after all. So he thought this was one of the craziest things he'd ever done in his whole life. Now, can you imagine? You're in a jungle, at war, about to die, totally outnumbered and surrounded. How can you think of having a cup of tea in a situation like that? It's absolutely bananas. Nevertheless, this was army. Orders had to be obeyed, especially at war. So he thought he was going to die anyway. What the heck? So together with the other few soldiers, they started making a cup of tea. At war. Surrounded, about to die. But in the time it took them to make the tea, the scout came back, whispered something in the captain's ear, and said, the enemy's moved. There's a way out. Put your stuff away quickly. We can crawl through. And of course, they all managed to escape. No one was even injured. And they lived to tell the tale. And that English teacher said, that particular captain saved his life. Not just once, but many times, because later in his life he had cancer, terminal cancer. It was like being surrounded by the enemy. There was no way out. But instead of trying to fight, he just sat down and had a cup of tea and never worried about it. Things changed. And when there was something for him to do, he could do it. How many times is it that we're in a deep mess, deep tragedy, deep difficulty? And what do? We try and fight our way out, and it kills us, or it makes it worse. Because we don't know how to wait and be patient. When there's nothing to do, do nothing. This is the most common sense statement, but people just forget that. When there's nothing to do, they think we have to do something, and they usually make it worse. So when there's nothing to do, do nothing. Rest, relax, have a cup of tea, even if you're about to die, surrounded by some enemy. Sort of the policemen are surrounding your house, the SWAT team is there. Or even worse, I'm not quite sure just what sort of messes you get into, but there's nothing you can do, just sit down and have a cup of tea. Or a cup of coffee. Or, you know, when I'm telling this story in Singapore, have a plate of noodles, whatever it is you like, have some dim sum or whatever. But enjoy the moment. And then see what happens. Because of impermanence, this life is, if you want to describe life, life is a flow of unexpected moments. I don't know about your life, but in my life it's always going in unexpected directions. You never know what to expect next. That's why life as a monk is not boring at all. I have a very interesting life as a monk. Get to see interesting people do interesting things. So if anyone wishes to have a wonderful career of great interest, be a monk, be a nun. You know, you go to great places, you go and see autopsies, and then you go and meet the Queen of England. You go into palaces, and then you sort of go into sort of ICU units. It's amazing just the sort of stuff you get up to as a monk, teaching in all sorts of places. So I have a great fun as a monk. Sometimes when you sort of, I was talking to Rachel earlier, so I gave a talk last week for Disability Day in the Where was it? Some Department of Education. And so you go in there and you have a nice talk because you're a monk. And you know the stories. I've given talks about adult themes on sort of 6PR and all these other sort of stuff you get up to as a monk. You have a great, interesting life as a monk doing interesting things. But you know that everything will always be changing. It's totally unexpected. I don't know what to expect next in life. And because of that, if you are in any difficulty or problems, just wait. If there's nothing to do, do nothing, because you know that things are going to pass. And it's usually the nature of life is to settle. The nature of life is to balance. You know, if the wind isn't blowing on the ocean, there's no waves. You know, if you leave things alone, protect things, everything settles down. If you just cover a wound, it usually heals, as long as you clean it up and just cover it up and give it time to heal. You don't have to do anything. But most people find it very difficult not to do anything. This is why people who are Buddhists, they know how to rest, they know how to stop, they know how to worry. As Dennis said the other day, if you've got a wound on your hand, don't keep looking on it and just picking it. Most people, they've got like a cut or a wound on their hand, so they put a bandage on it, and after 5 minutes, is it healed yet? No. And after another 5 minutes, they look upon it, maybe I'll put some ointment on. So they put some ointment on, that is to put on. They say, no, that's the wrong ointment. Maybe I'll take it off and put some other ointment on. And then they put it on. No, maybe not a sort of a band-aid. Maybe a bandage is better. They keep on messing around. It never gives a wound chance to heal. So understanding impermanence, understanding the way things are flowing all the time, there's nothing to do, just leave it alone, cover it up and it will heal by itself, because it's the nature of life, to heal, to move on. So whatever problem you're facing in your life, whatever difficulty there is, whether it's a sickness, whether it's a divorce, whether it's a loss of a job, whether it's an argument, whether whatever is happening in life, remember that this too will pass. The tragedies you've had so far in your life have passed. You've lived through them, you've grown through them. And the tragedies or difficulties you're experiencing now will be the same. But then you say, well, they're going to come back again. Why do they keep coming back again? And it's because all those tragedies and difficulties, they're there for us to learn from, to grow from, to become better from. The old simile that we look upon the tragedies, the pain of life as growing pains. This is actually what we learn from. Somebody once said it's like a bud of a flower. Just before that flower blooms, that bud is full of pressure, because you can imagine all these petals inside that bud are growing and growing and growing, putting in a huge amount of force on the outermost casing to burst it. So there's a lot of tension and pain inside that flower bud, and then it finally bursts into this beautiful flower. It almost seems to be that the birth of beauty is always preceded by some difficulty or some pain. You can almost call it just the birth of wisdom and compassion is like labor pains. When you sort of, you're suffering from the loss of a son or a daughter, when you're having problems because of the difficulties maybe in your finances, or when your own body is falling apart with a disease. Look upon that as labor pains. The difficulties will pass. You know they pass. They've passed before, and your job now is to be patient enough and wait. Always remember that sometimes people said they feel so depressed, life is so difficult, it's just like a wasteland, their life. I remember just going to sort of places in Northern Europe in the winter time when there was nothing growing, there was no leaves on the trees, no grass, it was covered with snow, and everything looked so desolate. The forests looked like graveyards with skeleton trees with nothing green on them. And sometimes you see that after bushfires in the places like Australia. We've had bushfires before down in Serpentine, had a very big one in 1991, a huge bushfire which went right through our monastery. And for those people who remember it, everything was black, there was no greenery left, it was a huge crown fire. But you know that that will pass. You look at that monastery now, you wouldn't believe, we have the photographs of what happens in a huge bushfire. That was the second hottest day ever in Western Australia. We had the bushfire at Serpentine. And it was much hotter when the fire hit. But you look at that and you see that even though there's a wasteland, underneath the ground there are seeds, there are life, there is energy and beauty just waiting to burst forth. You just need to wait. You know that from the ashes and from the blackened trunks of those trees, there is life underneath. There is life, there is growth, there is beauty waiting to happen. And all we need to do is to be a little bit more patient. Things do pass, we just have to wait for it. And you've seen it before, but we forget it. So no matter what difficulty or tragedy or pain we feel, remember, it will pass. And if you're having a good time, if life is going well for you, you've got a great relationship, your business is going well, your finances, the stock market is going up, and you're enjoying yourself, your meditation is going well, you're almost enlightened, this will pass. Remember that. And what do we mean when we remember that? When we remember it's not going to be permanent, we take better care of it. Remember, things were going to pass. The impermanence of all things is not a negative perception. Remember, Ajahn Chah would often hold up a glass. He'd use whatever props he had. When you haven't got visual aids, you use whatever's next to you. He'd hold up a glass and he would say, "Can you see the crack in this glass?" And when he would do that, the first time I looked at it, I said, "I can't see any crack in this glass. Are you sure? You know, you don't need your spectacles changed, Ajahn Chah." And "Can you see the crack in this glass?" And he would continue, said, "It's a microscopic crack." He said, "It's there because one day someone's going to drop this glass, or they're going to kick it, and that crack is going to open up. The glass is going to shatter and break." He said, "That's the nature of this glass. It's impermanent." And he said, "That's a wonderful thing to know there's a crack in this glass, because if this glass did not have a crack, say it was made out of plastic," he said, "that means you could drop it, you could kick it, you wouldn't need to care about it, because it was unbreakable." But he said, "Because it's breakable and fragile, that is why we must care for this glass and treat it gently and look after it, clean it, put it in a safe place, because it's fragile." And then he said, "Just the same with many things in life, like your relationships with each other. Doesn't matter how wonderful a relationship you have with your partner, it's got a crack in it. Because it's got that crack in it, you know that one day that will open up, either divorce, separation or death, eventually you do get separated. Because it's got a crack in it, because it's fragile, that is why you must care and put energy and effort and care into your time together. You know why relationships fall apart is because we take them for granted. We think it's going to last forever, as if it's like a cup made out of plastic. You can do whatever you like about it. Now, she's my husband, she's my wife, she's my partner, he's my partner. Doesn't matter now. When you remember it's fragile, you know it's going to pass, that's why you care. Your kids, you know, your relations, they're not always going to be there. That is why you must care for them. I remember my own father, he died at 16. When he died at 16, I wouldn't be here, would I? But anyway, when I was 16, that's when he died. And of course, as a young man, you thought your father was going to be there forever. And when he died, I realized there was so much unfinished business. You know, the things which I wanted to say to him but never did. You know, apologies I wanted to make, which I couldn't because he died. A young man growing up, I was just so stupid. But I realized from that experience that we only spend a certain amount of time together, so if there is something you want to say to the people you love, say it today, say it now, don't even wait a moment. Because the time comes when they're not there anymore, you can't tell them how much you love them, you can't say sorry, you can't say I forgive you, because the opportunity is gone. So when you understand about how these opportunities in life, they pass by us so quickly, because things are fragile, that is why we really care. So in the wonderful times of life, when things are going well for us, we know it's fragile. You know, it's liable to break down and shatter. So that's why we put so much energy and care into whatever we do in life. So when we understand just how things are impermanent, not only does it solve our problems when things are going difficult in our life, when things aren't going so easily, when we're sick, we're in financial trouble, when we're depressed, when we're anxious or whatever, it solves those problems. No, it's going to pass. But it also solves problems that when things are going well in our life, the things we love and care for, remember, we put more energy because these are very, very fragile. Look after your body, it's not going to last forever. I remember one of my favorite quotes was a person on his 100th birthday, he made it to 100. And when the newspapers asked him, have you got any wise advice to give to the world on your 100th birthday? And his advice was, if I'd only known I was going to live so long, I would have taken much better care of my body. Which is a wonderful saying, because, you know, you're going to have to live. And those of you who want to live 70 or 80, I mean, all of your heedless behavior of your youth, you have to pay for when you're old. You get away with it when you're young, but all those aches and pains and broken bones, they really come up as arthritis and many other problems when you get to 70 or 80. Just ask a few of the people over here. So really, you better look after your body, because you may have to be with it for a long, long, long time in the future. Like a car, you know, if you knew you're going to have your car for 20 or 30 years, you'd have to look after it. You can't just swap it that easily. So look after your body, care for it, because it might have to be there for a long, long time. So you look after your body because it's fragile, it's so easy to break. You look after, you know, your children, your parents, because you know that they are fragile, they're not always going to be there with you. You look after this happy moment you have today, because it's going to pass so quickly. So understanding about just how things change so quickly in our life, it actually takes us closer to this beautiful thing called the present moment. This present moment becomes much more valuable. What we have now, we care for it. We put more energy and effort and love into this moment when we realize it's fleeting and it's going to go. And also just some of the other things which we sort of obsess our mind with, become far less important. I remember just one of the great poems I read as a kid, and it was from the Scottish poet, you know, Robert Burns. He was talking about some of the ordinary pleasures of life. He says, pleasures are like poppies spread. You pluck the flower, the bloom is shed. Or like the snowfall in the river, white for a moment and then gone forever. Because that flower, the poppy, as soon as you pluck it, the petals fall off. Or those of you who've come from, or seen snow, especially if you come from Northern Europe, sometimes you see that snow falling, beautiful crystals, and when they hit the river or a pond, they totally disappear. The snowfall in the river, white for a moment, and then gone forever. Now that can be depressing for some people. For other people, there's a lot of beauty in there. That life is just this fleeting phenomena which we have to love and care for as it happens. And then because we know the nature of life is to disappear, to vanish and to change, that knowledge, that understanding, that helps us let go, because we've got no choice in the matter. We can't keep the snowflakes of life. Even the pleasures, the beautiful petals, we can enjoy them and they fall off straight away. We have to let them go and move on. One of the problems of people in life is when we don't know about impermanence and the change of things, we get attached, we linger too long. When we linger too long on the past, we can't enjoy the present. And it's the lingering, the attachment, the stickiness we have to what has just gone stops us really flowing with the changing winds or tides of life. And when we don't flow with things, that's when we get into lots and lots and lots of trouble. It reminded me of another story from one of my friends. He was this monk, and he wrote me this letter. Now, he was visiting his family in New Zealand. And I think with an old friend, they decided to go tramping, as they call it in New Zealand, which is like, you know, going on a hike, camping out in some of these little huts which they have dotted over the most beautiful parts of New Zealand. He said he'd been walking a long time with his friend, and they came to a beach, this deserted beach, sort of in the late afternoon. They were really hot from walking. And they thought, yes, have a swim. It was just so inviting. And so, you know, he had his robes on. I don't know if he's stripped off totally or just had his lower robe on. But there's no one around to see anyway, so who cares? So he went for a swim. And he was quite a strong swimmer in his youth, but being a monk, hadn't swam for many, many years. And unfortunately, he got caught in a rip current. Later we found out it was a very dangerous beach. There was a rip, this current, which had actually killed many other people. And so he got caught in this current. And so what did he do? Fortunately, because he was a monk, because he'd listened to these teachings so often, because he remembered them, he knew what to do. He let go. He knew that current would eventually peter out. And he also knew that it was too strong at that time for him to fight it. So he just relaxed. And he just managed to restrain his fear, because that current took him further and further and further away from the shore. And eventually the current just lost its strength. It was impermanent, it couldn't last. And when it lost its strength, when he could do something, that's when he started swimming. He started making for the shore. And he made it back to the shore, just, totally exhausted, and rested. He survived. And he told this wonderful tale. And he also mentioned, it makes so much sense, if he'd have fought that current, if he'd have swam against it, it would have still taken him that distance away from the shore. He wouldn't have been able to fight it. Only that when it took him to that distance from the shore, he would have been totally exhausted and would not have had the energy to swim back. He would have died. It was a beautiful, wise response to a situation. A current which you cannot fight. Let go, relax, knowing it's not going to last. And when it finishes, that's when he puts forth his effort to swim back to safety. That saved his life. The importance is to remember that whatever situation life gives you, the current eventually will disappear. That flow of that force has to stop sooner or later. And that's the time one can be effective. You waste your energy and your time fighting things which you've got no hope of beating. You just tire yourself out, and obviously you can even kill yourself that way. So when you understand that things are going to be passing away, it actually helps you do this wonderful thing of letting go and relaxing. This letting go and relaxing, you all know the importance of that, especially in Buddhism. You know, it's part of the essential teachings of meditation to learn how to let go. And people always ask, how do you let go? This is how you let go, knowing that these things are going to change by themselves. And the wisest thing for you to do is just to relax. Have your cup of tea. Don't be afraid. Even though you're surrounded by the enemy, even though you're going a long way from safety, relax. It's the only thing you can do, the best thing you can do. Things are going to change. When they do change, when there's something you can do, that's when you give all your effort. And it saves your life many, many times. It makes you a much more effective human being. So once one understands about the changing nature of things, that actually helps you let go. You know how to let go, when to put forth the effort. There's nothing you can do. You can't change the situation. I'll just leave it alone. Eventually it'll sort itself out. Worrying when there's nothing you can do is a human condition which creates so much pain and suffering. There's nothing you can do? Do nothing. Relax. And if you can just do that much, you'll be a much healthier person. You'll live longer and be far more successful. So, when you understand about that impermanence, you can let things go. You can relax. And you also understand when things are going well, you really need to put a lot of effort into life. Because don't take anything for granted. We take our health for granted, and that's why we get sick. We take our happiness for granted, and that's why we lose it so easily. All of these things, they have their karmic causes. So that's why that when you have health and happiness and things are going well for you, you don't just sit back and say, okay, everything's right in the world, I don't need to do anything more. No, keep on making that good karma. You understand the cause of happiness, the cause of health, the cause of having a good relationship. As any of you know who've been in a relationship, you have to keep working on it. Remember somebody gave me this example of like a relationship. It's like they use the simile of a fire. You know, when you first light a fire, you use paper, and there's this big flame comes up. That's called love. You know, when you fall in love with somebody, this big flame comes up. It's a paper fire. It doesn't last very long. But, you know, you have to have that paper fire to put the twigs and the branches on, the bigger pieces of wood. And, of course, those bigger pieces of wood, you know, like getting to know one another, getting to understand one another, that's when you get like a more solid fire. Because once that wood gets lit, you know, it can actually last. But, of course, that goes down sometimes. You can't just leave a fire. You've got to keep on adding more wood. And sometimes, you know, the fire almost goes out and you have to work together to blow the embers to get it started again. And when you get the big logs on that fire, then you know that's a solid fire which is going to last a long time. And you know those solid logs of a relationship, when you've been through stuff together, difficulties together, you've faced problems together, you've worked it through together. And that's the big logs of a relationship. But you always have to work on it. And there's no time when you can just sort of say, okay, we've got it all together now, we don't have to do anything else. Of course there's times when you relax and rest and enjoy, but there's also times of work as well. And the problem with human beings in our life, sometimes we think everything is going well now, now we can relax, we party too much, which is why then things go wrong. We wonder what's happened. You can see just with like financial crises, you know, partying too long, enjoying, you know, too much wealth, and then of course we go through recessions. But when we go through recessions, this too will pass. Of course it passes. It won't last forever. And so you just wait for a while. You keep cool. You don't worry too much. You always know if things go really pear-shaped. You can always become a monk or a nun. We'll always feed you. So you don't have to worry so much. There's always something you can do. But then when things go well again, people become heedless again. This is our problem in life, whether it's in economy, whether it's in society, whether it's in our Buddhist society. You know, we're doing well in this Buddhist society. We can't become heedless. We have to sort of keep on making sure we're doing the right thing and keep on working and putting forth effort into whatever we do in our life. Because if we do that, then we know that we're actually going to create happiness for the future. It's like the law of karma. You know, this is not just something you can just leave alone. So when there's something to do, you give it everything you've got in life. If you understand that, you understand how this impermanence in life, it solves the problems of difficulties when you're having a hard time, when you're sick. And it also solves the problems of when you're having a good time. The good times tend to last much better. So always making sure that sort of we can enjoy time when it's time to enjoy it, but also just we make sure we're working hard. And of course, at some times there comes a time when people really get into difficulties. You know, maybe they're getting sick and they're about to die. And it doesn't matter, and all things will pass. That famous story of Ajahn Chah, when I was sick in hospital, I have this terrible typhus fever. And it was scrub typhus. And the reason why I was in hospital, because at that time no one knew what the disease was. It was borne by little ticks in the jungle, and the local villagers had immunity from that typhus. And because they had immunity, the health department in Bangkok thought there was no such disease in that area. But we kept on getting it as Westerners because we didn't have the natural immunity. So you went into the hospital with very high fevers, scrub typhus, same symptoms as typhoid. They thought it was typhoid, so they gave all the wrong medicines. And it was a very, very difficult experience. Just to show you what, or to give you some understanding of what it was like, first afternoon I was in hospital, there was in a ward with maybe six beds on either side, just a monk's ward, and at 6 p.m. the nurse left his station, and by 7-8 o'clock the night nurse hadn't come back yet. So I was talked to the monk sitting next to me, shouldn't we let somebody know the night nurse hasn't come? And that's when the monk sitting next to me, who'd been in that sort of ward a few more days than I had, he said, there is no night nurse. If you get sick during the middle of the night, that's just bad karma. Now that was not reassuring for me. And imagine, can you imagine being in a hospital in Australia where for 12 hours of the day, or rather the night, you're left totally to your own resources with no emergency button, doctors or nurses on call at all? And that wasn't the worst of it, you know, because it was supposed to be, you know, some sort of unknown disease. They were shooting me up with all sorts of antibiotics, just cocktails, trying to see what worked. And those were the days, what, 35 years ago, 34 years ago, when they had recyclable needles, not these sort of throwaway ones we use today. So they were used many, many times, and they were sterilized so many times. And I'm pretty sure that because of this, Thailand 34 years ago was a third world country, was very poor, that first of all they would use the recycled needles in Bangkok, then they would send them up to the provinces to save money. And in these wards, they would probably use them on the ordinary people first of all, and the monks, we'd get them last of all, because we were supposed to be the tough guys. And I knew that was probably the fact, because the nurse who came to shoot me up twice a day, the morning and the afternoon, she was built like a water buffalo. And the reason why she was built that way is because she had to, because they weren't injecting you, they were stabbing you. And it was, she took the needle and go bang, right in my backside. And that really hurt. And after 4 or 5 days of that, morning and afternoon, doesn't matter how much metta I had, I hated that nurse. So that was how difficult it was in those hospitals. And you had a high fever, you felt terrible, you had no energy. You can imagine what it was like when one day Ajahn Chah came to see me. This big, important monk came to see me. And I felt so privileged and so uplifted to get a visit by this wonderful high monk that, you know, for a few minutes, you know, I felt so good until Ajahn Chah opened his mouth. And many of you know what he said. He told me, "Ajahn Brahm, you're either going to get better or you're going to die." And that's when he left. His bedside manner left a lot to be desired. It was so true. You know, because I know the sickness wasn't going to last. You're either going to get better or you're going to die. Fortunately, I got better. But at least I knew the sickness wasn't going to last. So the next time you go and visit your elderly mother in hospital, say, "Mom, you're either going to get better or you're going to die." See what she says. But you know it's not going to last. And why are people afraid of dying? You know you're going to do it anyway, sooner or later. Get it out of the way. So the impermanence of even life, the Buddhists have recognized that for many times. You're going to come back again anyway. You've done it before, so you just come back again. If you don't believe in rebirth, you finish with all the pain and aches anyway, so no big deal. But you know, the chances are you're going to come back again and do it all over again if you really want to. So what's the big deal? You've died before. And just look at the people who can remember their past lives and remember what it's like to die. They all say, now, they all say it's a wonderful experience. I remember this one story which I read recently. It's actually in a DVD of people who could remember their past life experiences. I think it was on a Channel 4 which somebody recorded, and we played it on a little computer down in our monastery. And there was this woman. She had some sort of disease or some sort of operation which went wrong. She left her body. She said it was the most wonderful experience she's ever had. She was enjoying it so much. When somebody told her, he said, "Look, you know, you're not supposed to die, get back." She didn't want to go. And so she said this person who was with her at the time, and her Uncle George or something, who was, you know, the person she met on the other side, said, "No, get back, you don't belong here." He said, "I don't want to go." He said, "You've got to go back." He said, "I don't want to." "You have to." He said, "I don't want to." And apparently the way she described it, that Uncle George got hold of her ghost or spirit, whatever you call it, sphere of consciousness, and literally threw her back in the body. And she said, "To this day, I will never forgive Uncle George for doing that." Because the death experience was very beautiful and lovely and peaceful and joyful. Just ask anybody else who's died, you can remember it. That's what it's like. So if you are in that situation, you're about to die, yeah, you're going to get better, you're going to die. Actually, the dying is probably the preferable option sometimes. So don't be afraid of it. You know it's not going to happen past. What many people say who have memories of that experience is it's the death is not the difficulty, it's the dying which is the difficult part. And it's a process of, you know, being able to let go of your body. But if there's nothing else you can do, just let go. Just go with the flow. Go with the current. And you know, if there's a time later on that, you know, you come back again, or the disease gets healed, or somebody sort of sees a problem and just gets rid of that problem, fine, then you can do something. But don't be afraid of these things. It just all passes. So if ever you're in great pain or difficulty, remember it will pass. And that's actually a wonderful panacea. You can deal with anything if you remember that. And when things are going well, to enjoy those moments, because they too will pass. Care for them, look after them. And if you can remember that simple teaching, your life gets enhanced enormously. And also you understand why there is this, you know, thing in life called pleasure and pain, why you have happiness and suffering sometimes. Because if you look more deeply into life, you see that all like happiness, all pleasure, is like a space, a gap, a pause between two moments of suffering. Because I used to look, you know, why? What are the happy moments of people's life? When is that? Look at the schoolies now. The schoolies who've, you know, left their high schools and they're free of school, they go partying at Busselton or Rottnest or wherever they go and having a great time. Why are they so happy? The only reason why the schoolies are having a wonderful time and good, having a lovely time, is because all the suffering of going through those, you know, year 12 exams. If they didn't have those exams, they wouldn't be happy. I remember once going to Perth Airport many years ago, the old Perth Airport, and waiting for a monk who was going to arrive. And as I was waiting for this monk to come through the customs and immigration, I saw all these refugees coming from Iran. I think there were some Baha'i community. And as soon as they came through into Australia, they were punching the air. And they were dancing up and down for joy. And it was such euphoria. It was contagious. And I found myself jumping up and down and punching the air until I realized these weren't the people I was waiting for. But, you know, it was euphoric. But I often wonder, why were they so happy? And I soon reflected afterwards, the reason they had such euphoria was because of all the pain and difficulty they'd experienced in the previous 3 or 6 months. They lost everything. They lost their homes. Many of their friends and relations were tortured and killed. And they had to flee from Iran, you know, when the Islamic Revolution happened. And they had to flee. And they had such difficulty and pain and turmoil. And when they came into Australia, there was this huge happiness. And that happiness was a result of all the pain which went before. It was a measure of that amount of pain. It's the same when, say, West Coast Eagles or Fremantle Dockers, when they eventually win a grand final, there'll be euphoria. But why would there be euphoria when the team wins the grand final? It's because of all the pain of all those losses and finishing on the bottom half of the table for so many years. If you won every year, you would not enjoy it. If you look very deeply and carefully, much of the thing which we call happiness in life is actually measured by what went before and what went afterwards. But remember, that's part of life. Enjoy that, but you know it's going to pass and you're going to have to work hard. You're going to have some difficulty and disappointment. But then that will pass too and you'll have happiness again. And much of that life is just a flow of happy moments and difficult moments. But understand that you're doing nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with life. There's no sort of big mistake. It's just the nature of life to be like this. So I want you to understand that's the nature of life. You know, to succeed and then to fail. You know, to be famous and then to sort of be... lose all your fame, you know, to be praised and then to be criticized. Understand that's part of life. And that you can't avoid that. Accept, make peace with that life, and then you can get that other part of happiness. Understand this is part of the fabric of existence. That much of the thing which we call happiness is a pause between two moments of suffering. And what we call suffering is just, again, a pause between two moments of happiness. So if you're having a hard time, you know it can't last. It's going to be happiness coming next. And when you have happiness, you know there's going to be some disappointment coming next. And then some more happiness. That's the nature of life. Look at it. Examine it. And see it for what it is. And then you know what it means by the saying, this too will pass. Not just the suffering, but the happiness. It all flows. And then one sort of stands back and gets this beautiful sense of understanding about life. Nothing's going wrong. This is the nature of our human existence. And understanding nothing's going wrong, one can flow with these things and even be content with it. In times of difficulty or suffering, it's just again the growing pains. In times of happiness, it's a time to enjoy the results of our hard work. It's like that story I give when I teach meditation retreats. Because sometimes people get great meditations during the meditation retreats. And the next meditation is always a difficult one. And they wonder, why is it I can't always get good meditations? Why is it that sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad? And I give the simile of the guy who went to work on a Monday morning. And on Monday afternoon he finished his work, he got nothing for his work. On Tuesday he went to work again. Again when he finished he got nothing in return for all his hard work. He wondered whether he really should go to work on a Wednesday, but he still went to the job. On a Wednesday he got nothing, Thursday he got nothing as well. He wondered what the heck he's working for, but he decided to go to work on Friday because he was doing nothing else. And on Friday evening the boss gave him a big check. And when he saw that, he decided he's only going to work on Fridays from now on. And of course, you just can't just work on Fridays. You get the paycheck because of all the hard work which went before. Remember just the suffering, the difficult times. When you get the happiness afterwards, after the suffering, the difficulty fades away, that's the paycheck you get in life. Then you've got to go to work again. And then you go to get the paycheck again. Then you get the weekend. Then you go back to work. Then you get the weekend. Then you go back to work. See, this is our life. So when you understand just the flow of life, the impermanence of life, it does pass. You understand that this is the nature of our life. We become wise to it. We understand it. And we don't add this extra layer of unhappiness or suffering in life, which comes when we don't understand its nature. I was taught, and this is how I am, that when you understand the nature of life, in this particular case, it's ebb and flow, and you work with it, you accept it, you embrace it, and use it, then you are far more successful and happy in life. When you misunderstand life, or even deny it, and think there's something going wrong when you can't control it, that's the cause of great suffering in life. So you know the ebb and flow of life. You know that this too will pass. You've been there, it's happened before. Understand that teaching, and it'll make you happier, more peaceful beings. And you'll find there's nothing you have to fear in life. Even the worst pain, you know it's going to pass soon. The most difficult disappointment, you know it's going to end. Whatever happens, you know it's just the coming and going of life, the ebb and flow of happiness and then difficulty and then happiness again. It's part of life. And life would not be rich if that wasn't the case. And what's our job to do? There's something to do. Care. Look after this life. There's nothing to do. Leave it alone and rest and have a cup of tea. Thank you for listening. So, has anyone got any questions or comments about this talk this evening? About just letting things flow. It will pass anyway. Any comments or questions? Coming. Oh yeah, okay, go on. Yeah? That's because I laugh at suffering. Yeah, she's saying that there's happiness and then suffering, and suffering then happiness. And Ajahn Brahm, you always have happiness. But it is like using the simile of like the tide. When the tide rises and rises and rises and rises, it's still got waves on that sort of body of water. So you've still got peaks and troughs, peaks and troughs, peaks and troughs. But as the tide rises, the troughs are higher than the peaks before. And this is actually what happens with when you understand wisdom. It's like the tide rises. So you sure you have your better moments and worse moments, but your worst moments are pretty good. And your good moments, woo, they really are good. So that's actually what happens. You still have the ebb and flow up and down, but with wisdom and understanding and acceptance, You never get so depressed, so upset, so painful. When things are going well, wow, they really go well. So the average of your happiness and suffering is rising, 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 rising. And that's what people are here for. That's a job of wisdom and kindness to do that. Do you get that? That makes sense? How you speed it up by being patient. I think you got that one. Thank you. Was there a question in the back? I couldn't hear that because someone... My anniversary is always an anniversary. What? 35th? Okay. No, it's just... Like tomorrow we're having a little celebration because it's King of Thailand's birthday and lots of Thai people come here, so they're having a celebration for that. But I also told them, because I remember 35 years ago on the King's birthday I became a monk. So it's my 35th monk anniversary tomorrow. So I've got another 5 years, because usually in any company you're allowed to work for 40 years and then you get compulsory retirement. So I'm hanging out for another 5 years. Well, I did hear that one of our friends over here was made redundant today. So is any redundancy payouts for the Buddhist Society available? I've done 35 years of hard work. Yeah. No sympathy at all. And of course, when you enjoy your job, then it's no problem at all. So of course, as a monk, as many of you know, as a monk or a nun, there's no retirement at all. So I have to keep on working 70, 80, 90. Do you know the oldest person in the world right now, according to the Guinness Book of Records, is a Buddhist monk in Phuket? He's 115 years of age. A Buddhist monk, and he still has to work. So I've got quite a lot of work in front of me. So anyway, yeah, no, it's just, it is an anniversary tomorrow. That's actually what the fireworks are for outside. Well, I made that one up. So, okay, any more questions? No? Okay, one more question, yeah.
How can you help when the moment is you have the cup of tea versus you getting everything you want?
Well, I think, how can you know when it's a time to have a cup of tea or actually do something? Many people feel they're helpless. It's actually realizing that having a cup of tea is a very positive thing to do. You know, you're enjoying this moment, and you look, there's nothing you can see you can do, so just leave it alone. And then after a while, just the unexpected happens. I wasn't going to tell this story, but now you've asked a question. This is another of the famous stories in Buddhism. Again, it's from Open the Door of Your Heart. There was a man being chased by a tiger. And the tiger was catching him. So at the last moment, he saw a well in the jungle. It was the only option. He jumped in it. And as soon as he jumped in, he realized his big mistake. The well was dry, and at the bottom of the well was a big black snake. So just instinct, he grabbed something at the side of the well. It was a root which was protruding through the wall of the well. It broke his fall. When he came to his senses, he looked down and the snake had been disturbed. And the snake had risen up, opened its hood and was trying to bite him on the feet. But his feet were just too high. The snake couldn't quite stretch far enough to bite him on the feet. And then he looked up, the tiger hadn't given up on his lunch. The tiger was leaning over the well, trying to paw him from above. But his hands were just too low, the tiger couldn't quite reach. So he was safe for a few moments. But then he noticed two mice came out from a hole in the well and start chewing at his root, making it thinner and thinner and thinner. One black mouse, one white mouse. So he knew he was not much longer to go before the root was so thin he would break and he'd fall. But as that was happening, the tiger, because it was trying to claw him from above, the back of the tiger was rubbing against the tree, making it shake. On a branch of that tree, overhanging the well was a bee's nest. The bees were no problem, but because the tree was shaking, honey dripped. And the man put out his tongue and tasted the honey, and my goodness, that was sweet. And that was the end of the story. Now, it's a lovely ending to a story, because that's life, isn't it? You don't know what's going to happen next. You're between a tiger and a snake, the black and white mouse, that was the night and day, just chewing at your precarious hold on sanity, life, health, happiness. And it's a snake or a tiger, you don't know what's going to happen next. You can always enjoy the honey which comes, a cup of tea. Now, that was the traditional story, the way I ended it in my book, because I'm a very positive monk. And this is plausible. That tiger, trying to paw the guy, leant over a little bit too far, lost its balance, tumbled into the well, missed the guy, fell on the snake, broke its neck and crushed the snake to death at the same time. Which is feasible. So the man at his leisure, he could climb out the well totally safe. And that's usually what happens in life. The unexpected is what happens in life. So if ever you're between a tiger and a snake, enjoy the honey. There's nothing else you can do. So the problem of most people, if they're between a tiger and a snake, they think they have to do something. If they're in a jungle surrounded by soldiers, they have to fight their way out. This gives you an alternative. Knowing things will change. The unexpected is about to happen. Remember that, and there'll be more chances that you have a cup of tea, and less chances that you make matters worse. So, if you want to have a guiding principle, take a chance on a cup of tea rather than doing something. Because usually we just do too much and don't drink enough tea.